our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'm great coming in off the bench, you know, in front of all the cheering fans. I'm ready to get this ball rolling.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm sorry to hurt your feelings, Justin.
How dare you? But, how fucking dare you?
I love you, buddy. I gotta come in hot.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So Ben was still in high school the last time Rich Hill threw over 110 innings at the major league level. Yeah, I love the football reference as my fantasy teams go down in flames on Monday Night Football.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 172 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are two new people to kind of the Monday podcast. That is Ben Brennis and Evan Peterson. Ben, how you doing?
Doing good, Justin. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. Both Mike and Matt called in sick, unfortunately, today, and you guys were nice enough to join me last minute, so I appreciate you coming on, Ben.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And then joining not only us, but Friends of Fantasy Benefits in his premiere, Evan Peterson. Evan, how you doing?
I'm great. Coming in off the bench, you know, in front of all the cheering fans. I'm ready to get this ball rolling.
Well, that's good. We're gonna throw you right into the fire because tonight we have a special guest on. That is Nate Grimm from Roto World. Nate, how are you?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's we are glad to have you this evening to talk some major MLB moves and their fantasy impact. Nate, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, what you do over at Roto World, and then where people can reach you on social media.
Yeah, so for Roto World, I'm sort of a Swiss Army knife kind of a deal. I'm not full time. So you know, DJ and Drew and Ryan Boyer, those are the kind of the guys that people recognize. So I do some. I write a couple columns a week, daily dose columns in the off season, and then you know, during the season, I write one or two columns a week of the daily doses as well. And then whatever when spring rolls around, we'll be doing a lot of showdowns and previews and stuff like that. So a lot more cranking out here shortly. But yeah, on Twitter, it's Nate_Grimm, Grimm. And that's where people can reach out and tell me how much I suck.
Do you get a lot of that on Twitter? Because I definitely get a lot of that, but it's usually from my friends and family.
Yeah, no, you know, I'm not sort of present enough. I'm not writing enough like hot take type stuff to get that kind of reaction. Most of my doses are just rehashing the night before. So if I was giving any sort of opinion or something, I'm sure I would get a lot more of it. But most of the stuff I do is pretty benign.
Yeah, pretty much all I do is hot takes, so I get plenty of hate.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Let's jump right in to kind of the big moves that have happened in the last week or so. We're going to start with a couple smaller moves. First, Steve Pierce signs with the Blue Jays, kind of starting to shut the door on Edwin Encarnacion returning to them. Nate, what are your thoughts on Steve Pierce in Toronto?
I'm okay with it. I mean, it's Pierce has kind of been a guy who, especially in the last couple of years, has kind of carved out a role as a lefty killer. He's going to be a platoon guy. So I'm okay with it for what it is. It's not too exciting. Doesn't really move the needle much. But Pierce is a nice player if you can get him in the right situations.
Evan, what are your thoughts on Steve Pierce moving to Toronto?
Well, yeah, with the door kind of looking like it's closing on Encarnacion, they need somebody that can come in and put the ball over the fence. Not that Pierce is going to pop, you know, 25 or anything crazy like that, but if he gets enough playing time, he could flirt with 20. And I think, you know, we're going to talk about kind of the moves that Boston's made and their left-handed dominant rotation. Pierce is just the kind of guy that you want to go up against those southpaw pause and in some crucial spots. So I think it's a pretty solid move and helps their kind of flow of players around the diamond.
Ben, what are your thoughts on Pierce in Toronto?
Personally, I do like the move. I guess it depends on if he's able to start the season healthy, because he is recovering from his surgery that he had back in September. But I do like the move for him. He's going to be a versatile option, so you know that he's going to be able to get a lot of playing time, provided that he does, in fact, stay healthy. He had a good average of .288 last year. The 13 home runs and 35 RBIs are always nice, considering that he did have a lot of time on the DL. So it will depend on who they get around him. They already have Morales there, so we'll see if they get some other pieces. It will be good for his counting numbers, I think. So,
yeah, I'm not a big fan of Steve Pierce in fantasy. The only thing I like about him is he tends to come with multi-positional eligibility. Which is great, especially if you're playing in AL only. But he's also a guy that ends up getting stuck in platoons quite often, and so that kind of hurts because you need to accumulate the stats. I like the move to Toronto, but the health concerns, platooning concerns, I'm probably not going to pay for Pierce in AL only, and I can't really see him being super viable in things much deeper or much shallower than that.
One place that I do think, just kind of chipping in here, but in daily fantasy, you can get him in that matchup where he's against the lefty. He's usually probably not going to be too expensive because he's Steve Pierce, but those are the kind of situations where you should look to exploit.
I think that is a fantastic point because he's definitely one of those guys, if they're going up against the lefty, especially in Toronto, but really in the majority of the AL East parks, that's a really great place to exploit Steve Pierce because he just does match them. He's got like a 24% or over 24% home run to fly ball ratio versus left-handed pitching last year. So, I mean, in that kind of smaller stadium against the lefty, yeah, daily fantasy, he's definitely one of those guys that his price will never be high enough that it should prevent you from being able to stick him in your lineup. Let's go ahead and move on, talk about Joaquin Benoit, who signed a deal with the Phillies. Evan, is this going to make him their closer, or are you interested?
I believe he should probably get the first crack at the closer job, but I don't think it really matters because the Phillies aren't going to win, a ton of games this year. And you can say, closers on bad teams and blah, blah, blah. We've heard that story, but I think they just needed somebody to come in. And I mean, their relievers threw to a, over 5 ERA last year, which was 28th in the majors. So I don't think you're going to go out and, spend money on, high elites. If you're, the Phillies, why not grab, 39-year-old guy that isn't going to be around for very long and just kind of see what happens until, a year or two down the road.
Ben, what are your thoughts on Joaquin Benoit in Philadelphia?
I mean, being a Mets fan, I get to watch the Mets actually play against the Phillies, but I do think that there's going to be some value because we did see what Genmar Gomez was able to do last year. He didn't have a great season, but he was still able to help fantasy teams out. I do believe that if he does stay in the closer role, which is still up in the air entirely, I do believe that he will, in fact, hold a decent amount of value, enough to get you some cheap saves. He may be able to get you like 15 to 20 saves, which, for someone who's maybe a last pick of a draft or, a very back end part of a draft or a waiver wire ad, it's a good value for what you're able to pay, considering what you're getting. People got Genmar Gomez off the waiver wire last year, and he was able to get him like 30 saves or something. So, you'll be able to get some hidden value, even though the Phillies are terrible.
Nate, are you in on Benoit as a cheap closing option for next year?
Yeah, I mean, he will be owned because the closing jobs are scarce and saves are something that we chase forever. He'll be worth owning in all leagues just for the fact that he's going to be getting save ops, I assume, if he wins that job, probably in spring. Not real exciting, not real high ceiling, but he's actually been pretty good here in the last couple of years, kind of in forgotten places. So the Phillies could again surprise. I think their roster isn't that bad and that far away from winning. So because he's one of 30 guys who's going to be getting saves, and because he's not a terrible reliever, he's worth owning. Yeah.
I agree with you. I actually think the Phillies are a kind of sleeper team in the NL East. Not that they're necessarily going to compete to win that division, but I wouldn't be surprised if they hang around a lot longer than most people think that they're going to. The top four of that rotation is pretty interesting with Helixson, Nola, Velasquez, and Eichhoff. So, I mean, they're one starter away from having a pretty solid starting five in a scrappy lineup. Not good by any stretch of the imagination, but they're going to win some games, and I think they're going to win some games by probably one or two or three runs for the most part. So I think whoever is the closer in Philadelphia will have some value. My only fear with Benoit is, I mean, this is a guy that has had issues pitching on back-to-back days. So I don't know if I'm necessarily going to be in on Joaquin Benoit, because I just don't know how many saves he's really going to be able to accumulate. I think this turns into a committee of sorts with Hector Neris, and I think that's the guy I'm going to target in drafts, because he's going to be going so much later. Neris is a guy I really love the skills, and if for some reason the Phillies do fall out of it before the trade deadline, Benoit is going to be shipped somewhere. So for me, I think Neris is the guy I want to buy in on rather than Benoit. Let's go ahead and move on to a guy who re-signed. That's Rich Hill, re-signs with a three-year deal to go back to the Dodgers. Nate, what are your thoughts on Rich Hill? Does his value change at all for you, and are you going to buy in on him next season?
I mean, you know, every person has a price. So, I mean, if he's there and I feel comfortable with where I'm getting him, I'm fine with it. I think that his skill set, you know, with his new sort of approach, throwing so many curveballs, it's proven to be effective. His health is always going to be a concern. I think you need to set the over-under on starts at somewhere like 20. And so, you know, if you're willing to sort of, you know, if that's baked into his price, I think he's a fine pick, but probably not someone I'm going to own, because I'm sure people will hope for the best and maybe, you know, pick him for 30 starts at what he did in the past couple of years and probably be disappointed.
Ben, are you willing to buy in on Rich Hill?
I personally like Rich Hill a lot. I was kind of a fan of him coming into last year just because I was a believer of him. I did know that when he was healthy in the past, many years ago, his curveball was nasty. He always gets a lot of strikeouts when he is healthy, and he puts up good numbers. But it's like Nate said, if he's not able to stay healthy, then he's not going to provide you a ton of value. I could see him getting about 15 to 20 starts, which isn't a ton. But we were talking about this before the show. Basically, whenever he pitches, he's lights out, it seems. And a good comparison to him is basically like Arian Foster. Arian Foster, we always knew was going to get hurt, but whenever he did play prior to this season, at least, he pretty much put up top-tier numbers. And you could expect top 25 numbers probably from Rich Hill when he's healthy. It just, you know that he's probably going to miss a good amount of the season.
Yeah, I love the football references. My fantasy teams go down in flames on Monday Night Football. Evan, what are your thoughts on Rich Hill?
Well, he's old, like Arian Foster. I mean, not old for the earth, but like old for, you know, the sport. Do you really feel good about him throwing 125 innings? No. Do you really feel good looking at the, you know, the difference in like walk percentage when you compare his first half and second half, which, you know, differences in inning totals. So you can't exactly compare apples to oranges, but way better in that second half. And a lot of it was due to the amount of fly balls he was putting in the air. I think if he kind of evens out, I just want nothing to do with it. I would rather, you know, burn my money elsewhere and, you know, kind of point and laugh at the Rich Hill guy if he does end up going down.
Yeah, I can't imagine there's going to be a price low enough in drafts this year that I'm going to be a buyer on Rich Hill. I mean, let me just ask a quick question that has nothing to do with baseball really at the moment. How many of you guys, because I really don't know the answer, graduated high school after 2006?
I did.
Evan?
I graduated in 2004, so I'm a little bit early. Yeah,
2005, so I'm riding that line there.
Okay. And I'm 2008.
So Ben was still in high school the last time Rich Hill threw over 110 innings at the major league level. I mean, so like I don't want a guy who's only going to give me half a season. Like, I know he's only going to give me half a season. He may turn around and shock people this year, but it's not going to be on my dime. And people are paying the price of a guy that is going to pitch three quarters or more of the season. To me, he, you know, it's a remarkable story. Thank God he finally got paid, because, you know, this is a guy who has been in the major leagues, you know, off and on since 2005 and hadn't really got his, you know, real deal. He gets a three-year, $48 million deal. Great for him. But I want nothing to do with him on my fantasy team, especially in deeper formats. If you're an NL only, you need the innings to count. And if he only pitches 100 innings, you're getting kind of screwed. So, I mean, at best, I would say he gets to maybe 130, 140. And that to me, there's not enough value there considering where he'll be going in drafts.
And one just quick thing that I had kind of noted last year was that if I'm going to have a guy down the stretch, I would rather him just completely suck as opposed to like be good but not know when he's going to play, because then I'm hanging on to him, I'm playing the what if game, and it tends to hurt me much longer in the long run as opposed to just cutting bait and finding something else on the wire.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a league where like you have unlimited DL slots, then go for it. But for the most part, I think we've all dealt with a ton of injuries throughout the season, had to juggle DL slots, drop guys that were on the DL because you just didn't have room to roster them, especially in like 12-team, 14-team leagues. So, I mean, if you're in an unlimited DL slot league, sure, you know, go ahead, you know, grab him in your 12-team league. But, I mean, anything deeper than that, you really put a strain on your roster when he goes down for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks here and there. Let's move on to my favorite signing so far of the offseason. That's the Giants getting a closer who can actually pitch in the ninth inning. Mark Melancon signs with the Giants. Evan, what are your thoughts on Melancon moving to San Francisco?
I mean, the ballpark is, you know, going to be great for him, and I think he's got great defense behind him, especially, you know, in the infield. So he doesn't need to crank out, you know, double-digit strikeout numbers. And as long as he's cutting down the walks and the base runners, I think it's a solid move all the way around, and it can only bolster what, I mean, I don't think the Giants rotation is phenomenal by any stretch of the imagination. I'm sorry to hurt your feelings, Justin.
How dare you? But, how fucking dare you, Evan?
I love you, buddy. I gotta come in hot. But I think it's a very nice piece for them, and one that, you know, when it comes time, you know, for the playoff run, he's going to be a difference maker if he's on the field.
Nate, what are your thoughts on Melancon to San Francisco?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of sneakily been, if not in that top tier, I mean, right behind, like a 1A to that top tier of closers in the last couple of years. And so, you know, that's exactly what the Giants needed to do. They needed to be in the running for all three of the big three free agent closers, and they ended up getting one of them. And so, I mean, that's basically all they aimed to do at the start of the offseason. I think it's all they saw that they really needed to do. And so, I mean, it's a great situation for them. It's a great situation for him. And so, no, I can't see any real downside to putting Melancon now in that tier with the Aroldis Chapman, you know, Kenley Jansons of the world.
Ben, what are your thoughts on Melancon to San Francisco?
I'm a big fan of the deal, mainly for the fact that when we were coming into last season's drafts, he was a bit undervalued for me. I tend to favor pitching a lot more than I guess the other guys on the site, but with him, he was basically not considered one of those top tier closers, which was nice because you were able to get him a decent part down the draft considering what his numbers the previous year were, and then he went and put up even better numbers this year. I can only imagine that those numbers are going to likely repeat, if not potentially improve just slightly, with the team in San Francisco for an entire year, considering what Pittsburgh had at the beginning of the season. When he moved over to the Nationals, I think that's more of the stat line you're going to probably have. He's probably going to be getting close to 50 saves. I would say close to 60 to 70 strikeouts. anything under a 1.8 ERA and a sub 1 WHIP is always fantastic, and that's going to be someone that's a linchpin for your relief pitchers, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, from a fantasy perspective, I love Melanson going to San Francisco, especially for just this year. You know, if you're looking at keeper in dynasty formats, you know, he's not the youngest of guys. There have been fears that maybe there could be a fall off at some point, but for 2017, I think he's easily a top 10 closer. You know, from a real life perspective, being a Giants fan, I hate seeing them give the long term contract to him when it probably wouldn't have cost them that much more to give an extra year and $20 million to, you know, Jansen or Chapman. Though it looks like Chapman, we'll talk about him in a little bit, but he did not want to go to California no matter what. So, you know, as a Giants fan, I'm a little bummed that they didn't get Jansen, but, you know, they're going all in right now. Who cares about the later ends, you know, end of this contract, because they'll probably end up blowing everything up if they don't make another run in the next year or two. So, as far as fantasy goes, obviously I think he's a top-tier option at relief pitcher for 2017. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about a trade between the Red Sox and the Brewers that people really haven't talked much about because it's kind of a lower-end trade, but could lead to some interesting fantasy implications in deeper formats. That's Travis Shaw moving to the Brewers and Tyler Thornburg returning to the coming to the Red Sox in return. Nate, what are your thoughts on these two guys? Do they strike you as interesting in deeper formats?
Yeah, I'd like to say Thornburg is interesting. He's kind of the first man up if Kimbrel goes down. But really, you know, if Kimbrel's firing on all cylinders, then he's just going to be probably a really good setup man, kind of a Dylan Betances. A lot of strikeouts, but you know, a lot of holds if they count that. But really, no, you know, not great for our game. You know, Shaw should get some playing time in Milwaukee, and you know, could do something with it. I mean, he had stretches in the last couple of years where he was pretty good, and then, you know, stretches where he was kind of average, which is what you expect for someone like Travis Shaw. But, you know, in a place like Milwaukee where there's not expectations and you're, you know, just doing your thing, they've actually got a sneaky, decent to good lineup. I actually kind of like a lot of the Brewers. So, I mean, you know, if he's hitting in the middle five or six in that lineup, you know, he could do some things, and he's not going to cost you much. So I probably like Shaw more than Thornburg for our purposes, but in real life, I mean, I think the winner is the Red Sox getting Thornburg.
Ben, what are your thoughts on this move, Thornburg going to Boston, Shaw going to Milwaukee?
For real life, I like it a lot for Boston because Thornburg is going to be a good setup man. And it's like Nate said, if Kimbrel goes down, then that's going to be a solid fill-in. Especially because he does get a lot of strikeouts and he's had good ratios. And last year we saw that he is capable of closing. So we do know that he will be able to get some saves probably, even if he gets a couple during the year just because Kimbrel's out today or on back-to-backs or anything like that. I'm not a big fan of Travis Shaw in general. I believe if he ends up playing bad, he could easily just lose playing time because as of right now, it looks like Scooter Gennett's going to get pushed out of the starting lineup, and not that Scooter Gennett's that good. But if Shaw's not playing well, there's not a lot of necessary incentive for them to play him over instead of someone else that they could bring up from their minor league system, considering that they did bolster that this past trade deadline. So I do like that Hernan Perez is probably going to be able to move around a little bit, but I do believe that that's going to come to Shaw's numbers as a result, and we could end up seeing Shaw get the back seat to some playing time. So we'll see what happens there.
Evan, what are your thoughts on this trade?
I mean, I think Shaw is going to find his time on the diamond, whether it's at third base, whether it's at first, because, you know, the Korean that guy. I don't know as much hype as he's been getting if he's really gonna, you know, be a world beater, and it makes room for Arcia. Once again, just not a ton in Milwaukee to be, you know, extremely ecstatic about, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Multi-position eligibility never hurt anybody, and I'm sure he'll find plenty of it. As far as the Red Sox are concerned, I think they needed to bolster that bullpen after Uhara left, and you know Carson Smith isn't going to be ready to come back until the middle of the year. So I think it's just the guy that they needed for a guy that they you know really didn't need in Travis Shaw, and I think it's a win-win for both teams.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Travis Shaw either. I think he will get some at-bats, at least to start. But, you know, I mean, Hernan Perez is there. You know, Scooter Gennett can come back in. I mean, there's a number of guys. They've got guys in the minor league system that will probably be coming up at some point, which are going to push people kind of around. And I just think that playing time issues may kind of pop up if he struggles. And we saw him be hot last year, and we saw him struggle quite a bit last year as well. So, If he struggles at all, I think it's going to be a pretty quick hook. So he's probably not a guy that I'm super interested in outside of maybe if I can get him for a couple bucks in an NL only. In terms of Thornburg, I really like the move to Boston. He was a guy that, you know, usually moving to the AL East is not a good sign for a pitcher. But he showed last year that he can pitch in a bad environment, that being Milwaukee. Really excelled in the bullpen since being moved there. You know, Kimbrel obviously is going to be the guy who gets the majority of the saves, but I agree with Ben. He'll sneak in a few. You know, if he could sneak in five to seven saves throughout the season, that is pretty decent value. And if you're in a holds league, he's a guy that is going to rack up a ton of holds because I think Boston is going to be the best team in the American League and maybe the best team in baseball next year. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about kind of the biggest move that we've seen so far. That was the Chris Sale trade. Moves to the White Sox. The White Sox get Moncada and Kopech back in the deal, as well as two other minor leaguers. Nate, what are your thoughts on Sale moving to the Red Sox and then all these prospects heading to Chicago?
Yeah, it's sort of the kind of deal that makes sense for both sides. You know, the Sox really have kind of been an advocate for the Sox doing something. In fact, for Roto-World, I wrote the kind of the postmortem of the 2016 season, and you kind of look ahead to the next season and say, well, if the Sox decide to sell, which they haven't to this point, I mean, Kenny Williams had kind of been reluctant, or Rick Hahn had been reluctant to pull that trigger. And so I think it was the right time to do it, and I think that they got the right kind of deal to do it. For the Sox, I understand it in the sense that, you know, they got steamrolled by that good Indians rotation in the postseason, and they probably said, you know, we need to do something about this. I mean, I don't know that Sale was like the biggest need, but I mean, it's sort of a, you know, can you have too many good things sort of thing? So they could afford to make that move. It, you know, it hurts them in the long run, and if Sale's arm ever does blow up like some people expect it to, it could look really bad for them, and for the Sox, you know, for the White Sox, I should say, to get Moncada and Kopech back and a couple other guys that were on the Sox top 10 list is a nice haul for them and a good start to the rebuild that, that you know, then they continued a couple days later.
Ben, what are your thoughts on Sale moving to Boston and these prospects moving to Chicago?
Well, I like it a lot for Chris Sale because it's going to help his numbers at least a good amount just because of, at least in terms of win totals, probably going to go up a little bit. You could easily see his ratios going down just so slightly, which obviously is always an improvement. I'm one of those believers that do believe that at some point Sale's arm is going to fall off, it feels like. Even though he's never hurt that much, it always seems to me that at one point I'm just going to like get an ESPN alert saying that Chris Sale is going to get Tommy John surgery. In terms of the haul that the White Sox got, I like it a lot. Obviously, with Moncada, he's been a top prospect, and that's not going to be changing. He's going to finally get some more playing time down in the minors so he can keep developing his game. So that's good for him. Boston somewhat rushed him up a little bit this year, I felt. I personally didn't think that he needed to be in the majors this year, but I guess that's why Boston runs a team and I just run a fantasy team. as for Kopech, I like him a lot to be a frontline starter if he gets his shit in order. Obviously, we don't need him going around trying to fight his teammates again and getting sidelined because of that. But he's got a lot of talent in that arm of his. It just depends if he can harness it. But I do believe that with the pitching coach that they have in Chicago, especially with what they've done with Rodon and what they've done with Sale in the past and Quintana, I do believe that they'll be able to harness it to a degree and extract some good value out of him. So I like that a lot. So,
Evan, what do you think about this trade?
Well, I mean, I like it a lot better just because I like the, young talent that the Whites, don't get me wrong, Chris Sale is phenomenal. He's probably the number three or four pitcher off your board next year. I mean, for me anyways, I could be wrong, but you know, nobody's going to argue with that, but I am absolutely gaga over Moncada. I think he's going to be an absolute stud. I really like, I'm going to butcher the dude's name, Basabe, the
I'm not even gonna try to pronounce it. There's a reason why I said dead two other prospects.
Yeah, just fill in, you know, in your mind that I said the right name and continue. But over 110 games he hit .264 with 26 doubles, 9 triples, 12 home runs. I mean, it's all class A numbers, but I mean, just something you definitely like to see from the young guys. And I think, what is it, Kopech? Kopech. That, once again, that guy. 156 opponent against average over 12 starts last year. I think he's definitely going to come up and make a difference in a rotation that, you know, especially if they ship off Quintana, is going to need somebody to come up and be a stud. Not that you need to worry about him necessarily this year, but I think it's a great move for the White Sox, and you can't argue with getting Chris Sale if you're the Red Sox.
I believe the prospect's name is Basabe. But I'm not 100% sure if that's how it's pronounced. Though I think someone told me that Dave Stewart, when he was the general manager over in Arizona, traded for his brother, but meant to trade for him. So
really,
accidentally screwed up. Supposedly, this is something that I think Matt was telling me. Matt Thompson was telling me that he accidentally traded for the wrong Basabe brother from the Red Sox. Which wouldn't surprise me coming from, you know, or knowing what I do about Dave Stewart. But in terms of this, actual trade, I love Kopech. I mean, I think he is, he could be a frontline starter. And if all goes wrong, at worst, he's going to be an elite closer at some point. So I think, you know, obviously the White Sox are going to try and make sure they can kind of turn him into a starter. He's got a plus fastball, plus a slider. Needs to get that third pitch going. If he can get his changeup going, he should be a pretty elite starter. You know, number one, number two kind of guy at his ceiling. So, you know, Moncada, I'm probably going to be the lowest on him in every ranker that, you know, in the industry this year. I know a lot of people really love him, really love the potential. But, I mean, there's so much swing and miss to his game that I just worry that he's not going to make enough contact to really reach the potential. I think he will definitely give something, but I think there are going to be years in which he bats, you know, 220, 230, still gives you great counting stats, but the average is going to drop down his value. So if he can't figure out the contact issues in the minors, then I think this is a guy that is going to get overdrafted this year and in years in the future. And then as far as Chris Sale goes, I mean, I think he's still a stud. You know, could the AL East, you know, hurt his ratios a little bit? sure, but I'm not real worried about that. I'm not worried about his arm falling off. I mean, at some point, you got to give the guy credit. He's only had one DL stint in his entire career, I believe, and that was for a near foot injury that he started the year on the DL. So, I mean, at some point, you just got to give the guy credit that maybe he knows what he's doing with his body. He toned down a little bit of the velocity this year just to kind of keep his body healthy. I think this is a guy that, as long as you don't put him in the wrong jersey, is going to be great for your fantasy team. Let's go ahead and move on, talk about Mitch Moreland, another guy who the Red Sox picked up, signs with them. Evan, any thoughts that he might be valuable in any format this year?
In deeper leagues, he's not somebody that I'm, rushing out to, expect, 27 home runs from or anything stupid crazy like that. But, I mean, you got to love the pieces around him as far as just kind of counting numbers. And, he's going to be their DH full-time or
it looks
somebody
like
else?
They've got him slotted in at first base.
At first base.
Move
so,
Hanley to DH.
I mean, that would make sense, although, he did have, I believe it was a shoulder injury back in, 2014. But I'd much rather have, Moreland out on the field than the walking time bomb that is Hanley Ramirez sometimes. I think it's a good move, but he's not going to be top 15 first baseman for me. So just late round fodder.
Nate, what are your thoughts on Moreland as first baseman in Boston?
So I think he could be one of those like sneaky, good, first base is so deep that you don't need to necessarily pay up for the top guys. And so if you want to wait around and kind of grab a guy later, throw a couple darts, he could be one of those dart throws where, in the right environment, in a great lineup, has the power, has shown it, but he's a 250 whatever hitter, but could hit 20 plus homers and could even surprise maybe in a good environment. And so doesn't move the needle a whole lot, but kind of just a boring but potentially useful player, kind of a guy you grab at the end of a draft as a lottery ticket and maybe he paid off.
Ben, what are your thoughts on Mitch Moreland?
Personally, I actually think that Mitch Moreland is going to have some decent value for deep leagues, not really standard or even medium-sized leagues. But basically, he's probably going to end up splitting some time with Hanley at first. And then when he is able to play first and Hanley's able to DH, he'll get regular at-bats. But I probably see him getting around 400 at-bats or so, maybe 15 to 20 home runs, which has some decent value, more so than other people. I like him more than Travis Shaw, basically, which isn't saying a lot, but I do believe that he's going to have some decent value. He's their best fielder over at first, so that's going to help him get some playing time at least. It'd be nice to see him get his average up to at least 250 because he just kills you there. But at least 20 home runs from three of the last four seasons is nice, so it's good if he can get some consistency with that. So,
yeah, I think he is an interesting AL-only guy, maybe at your corner infield. I don't believe that first base is quite as deep as it's been in the past. I've been a proponent so far this offseason in saying that first base is one of the more shallow positions, at least for the elite guys in fantasy coming into this next season. So, I mean, if you miss out on kind of the elite options and you're kind of just filling in with a Mitch Moreland for a few bucks in AL only, I don't mind it because I think that .233 average you saw last year is going to come up. He only had a .266 BABIP, so you should get a little bit luckier on balls in play. He's going to be in a fantastic lineup. I just worry how much playing time there actually is in a loaded Boston lineup. Right now he's slated to kind of be on the strong side of a platoon that would move Hanley to first base when Moreland sits and Chris Young into the outfield. And I hate to say it, but I don't think that Boston is done. I mean, I think Mitch Moreland looks much better for them coming off the bench and being a guy who can play first, play in the outfield if needed, and a guy like Edwin Encarnacion playing first base DH. I know they've said they're not in on E5, but the longer he sits out there, and the amount of money that Boston has, how much they want to win another World Series, it would not shock me to see Boston go after a guy like that, go after a Jose Abreu via trade. They already worked out one trade with the White Sox. Why not go out and work out another one if they're just going to, mortgage the farm? So I just don't know if there's going to be enough playing time for Mitch Moreland down the stretch. But for a couple bucks, if he still got the job as we're getting into March, then sure, I'll take a gamble on him in a deeper format. All right, let's talk about the other big trade, or one of the other big trades we've seen. That's Adam Eaton goes to the Nationals. Giolito and a couple other prospects heading to the White Sox. The White Sox mortgaging their current time for some future and some huge upside. Ben, what are your thoughts on Eaton to the Nationals and Giolito to the White Sox?
Well, I think for in terms of the trade, I think that the Nationals paid a little too much for Adam Eaton. I know that he's got a lot of value, especially defensively, and as a top of the lineup type guy, it allows Trey Turner to not necessarily have to play center field, which allowed them to move Danny Espinosa. So I think there was some good value there for them. And I like Adam Eaton as a player. He's not anything spectacular for fantasy in my eyes. Like his 284 average, I'd like that to be higher. 14 steals for a guy who I know can steal more would always be nicer. 14 home runs, the 59 RBIs. Those are decent stats considering they're coming from a one or a two, basically, in terms of batting order. The 91 runs is his most healthy fantasy attribute, basically, since unless you play in a defensive run save league. I'm not as big of a fan as on Giolito as I was coming into last year. They kept tweaking his mechanics last year, and I was just getting more and more worried as the season went on as a result of that. You saw a dip in his miles per hour for his fastball, but he does have a lot of talent there. I'm not really sure if he's the top of the rotation guy that everyone expected him to be. I could see him being a number two, maybe a number three, but I don't know if he's still going to be that number one type ace that everyone kept thinking he was. So I do think being able to move Eaton was a nice piece for them, and they were able to get back some other pieces that they could actually work with. So I think that would be good for the White Sox.
Nate, what do you think about this trade?
That's another one that we talked a little bit earlier about the sale trade and how the Sox are kind of doing the rebuild, and I think this is another great, sort of step in that direction for the Sox. I mean, the thought when it was originally happening on Twitter, and all that anybody really knew was that Eaton was going to the Nationals and that Victor Robles was not part of the deal back. The thought was, then it's either Giolito or Ronaldo Lopez. And then to get both of those guys and to get the first-round pick, I think his name is Dunning from last year, to get all of that in one just goes to show, I think, first, it's sort of the that Han's been holding out for that kind of deal before he started, to sell off these pieces. And so, and then also, the value that Eaton has in real life, is like you guys were saying. I mean, as a fantasy player, I think he's less exciting than he is. He was worth six wins last year as a baseball MLB player. Certainly wasn't worth that in fantasy. He's a nice player. He's not a real exciting fantasy guy. But, hitting it at the top of that Nationals lineup will be nicer than hitting at the top of the White Sox lineup. I think he could provide, touch 100 runs, kind of the same amount of steals, the same sort of power average, all that stuff. So really the run stands to benefit the most, and it's also, where he kind of does his best work. For the White Sox, they kind of hedged their bets on Giolito by getting Lopez as well. Giolito, I think, entered last year as sort of that number one prospect, and then there was some concern, not only with you know what they were doing to him, but also then his performance on the field. And so, you know, it's a nice gamble, I think, for the Sox. I mean, anytime you can get a guy who is considered by prospect watchers the number one pitching prospect in baseball, you know, I think that that's it's hard to pan that move. So, you know, I think it's a good deal for both teams, again, for what the Sox are doing with the rebuild, and then for the Nats for their needs at the top of the lineup and in the outfield.
Evan, what's your thoughts on Eaton to the White Sox, or Eaton to the Nationals, and the prospects to the White Sox?
Well, I think that if you look at the two moves that the White Sox made in kind of like separate scenarios, they may look like head scratchers from the outside, but when you start looking at the inner workings of, okay, we're getting rid of Sale, but we can kind of play it off to our fans that we're bringing in this top prospect. And, you know, if he sucks, then hey, he was young and he's still going to grow into it. And there's still kind of hope at the end of the tunnel. I mean, I think Eaton is the Nationals' way of saying, hey, we can't really do a ton to bolster. Like, our rotation's pretty much phenomenal, and yeah, we could use some bullpen pieces, but we're just going to try and, you know, score more runs than anybody else. They were third in the National League last year, and I think they kind of look at the rotation and say, well, what else can we do here? And we may as well just put some more runs on the board. As far as kind of the White Sox and Giolito, I mean, I think he's just one of those guys where you're going for it and you just kind of got to put your money where your mouth is and hope for the best. And I don't think Giolito is going to be, you know, an absolute dominant force, but is he going to be any worse than Carlos Rodon was, you know, his first time, you know, an extended major league look? I don't think it's going to be horribly off, and I think that could be something that you could look at as kind of a comparison and how they handle him.
Yeah, if anybody can fix Giolito and kind of get him back to kind of the pedigree that we expected the last few years, it's Don Cooper. So, I mean, you know, I've got a lot of respect for the White Sox pitching coaches and Don Cooper especially. So, I mean, yeah, I know the Nationals, it feels like they sold low on Giolito, and I think they did, obviously. But at the same time, they're looking at winning a championship. Giolito doesn't fit into the short-term plans. And I think I think it was Ben mentioned the underrated aspect of this deal is that by, you know, moving or by gaining Adam Eaton, they're able to move Trey Turner to shortstop full-time. They've already parted ways with Danny Espinosa, sending him to the Angels, which I'm sure we'll talk about on next week's podcast. That really bolsters their lineup. The top half of their lineup looks absolutely deadly at this point. And Adam Eaton's going to be a huge beneficiary of that. Would it surprise me if he got 110, 120 runs scored in this lineup? It would not. So, you know, he's not necessarily a stud guy in terms of fantasy impact, but I think he makes the overall team better, and he's going to benefit from the guys who are hitting behind him in terms of kind of his countables. And then, you know, Ben mentioned a little bit about his lack of speed or lack of stolen bases, considering his speed. The Nationals were top six last year in stolen bases, and the White Sox were middle of the pack. So, I mean, the Nationals are a team that will move on the base paths much more so. They had almost 50 more stolen bases than the White Sox last season. So you could see quite a bit of an uptick for Adam Eaton in terms of stolen bases next year, which would only further increase his value. I think he is going to be a little bit undervalued, and people may kind of look at the return and be pissed off that the Nationals sold low on Adam Eaton, and sometimes that translates into where people are willing to take a guy's in terms of fantasy drafts. We saw it last year with the Shelby Miller trade. Now, Shelby Miller was god-awful, don't get me wrong, but a lot of people were really low on him coming into last year only because they did not like the return or they did not like the trade that Arizona made to get him. they bake that for some reason into his value. If that happens with Adam Eaton this year, I'm going to be all over him as a number three, number four outfielder. In terms of the prospects going back over to the White Sox, I mean, I love Giolito. I think people are kind of selling him a little bit low right now. It's high risk, high reward. You know, I still think he has a plus fastball. I still think he has a plus curveball. Needs to work on the command and get everything together. But like I said, if anybody's going to fix him, it's going to be the White Sox pitching staff. They've got one of the best pitching coaches in the game. So I'm willing to buy low on Lucas Giolito in dynasty formats if that is an option, if the guy in my league wants to sell. Ronaldo Lopez, I don't think he is going to be a starter long-term in the major leagues. I know some people disagree with that. I don't like the command. So I got to see him up close and personal when he pitched against the Giants at AT&T Park last season. He looked great for three innings and then just completely fell apart. And that's, I think, the kind of thing you're going to see from him. For me, he should go to the bullpen, be an Andrew Miller, be a you know, maybe even a closer or something like that. I don't think starting is going to work out for him. And Dane Dunning, I think, is really far away. I don't know a ton about him, but, I mean, he's got the body size that would make you think that he could be a starter. Some control issues, but not a ton of innings on his arm because I believe he was a closer in college. So, you know, he wasn't one of those college guys that was overpitched while in college. So that is a little bit promising, maybe worth a stash in a deep dynasty league. All right, let's move on to the next signing. That was Wilson Ramos signing with Tampa Bay. Mike, unfortunately, is not here, so he doesn't get to talk about his own team for once. Start with you, though, Nate. What are your thoughts on Ramos signing with Tampa?
I like it for Tampa's sake. I think it's a nice gamble on a guy who, when he's healthy, is one of the most dangerous catchers as far as with you know, offensively, and so they're gonna, you know, they're baking in that half a season they're gonna be without him. But, you know, definitely if he comes back healthy this year, whatever they get this year, assuming they're probably not really gonna try and contend anyway, you know, they've got him for a full year in 2018 at a pretty reasonable price, and then you know, you can offer him a qualifying offer, however that system, you know, is set up now, you know, and maybe get something back for him or try and keep him around or whatever. But then, you know, in 2018 could be, again, one of the best offensive catchers that they just had to suffer through a couple months this year without him. For Ramos, you know, he's kind of betting on himself, you know, taking a shorter deal and saying, I'm going to come back and, you know, I'm not going to make a ton of money on this deal, but I'm going to come back and prove I'm healthy. And so, you know, it's how he's going to perform in Tampa. I don't really love the situation for him, but for Tampa, I mean, it's a nice little buy low opportunity on a guy who's a really good offensive catcher when he's healthy.
Ben, what are your thoughts on Wilson Ramos signing with Tampa Bay?
I love Wilson Ramos. I've loved him for the last couple of years, and I was a big believer in his talent. And when he got the LASIK eye surgery this most recent offseason, or last offseason, I should say, I expected to see an improvement just because there was tangible evidence that he had done something to improve on his skills, basically. I didn't expect him to, you know, put up 22 home runs, 80 RBIs, and a 307 average. But with him being out, I think it would be a decent buy-low opportunity because if you have an IR spot, you can still get him. You can just plug him there, and then you'll get a top four offensive catcher, basically, for the back half of the year. I'm not a big fan of the situation down in Tampa Bay, but I do like that he will be one of the centerpieces of that offense. I do believe that he will be able to give some good value. If they do keep playing him at DH for a majority of the season, I think it speaks a lot of volumes about what they think of Corey Dickerson, because they don't think he's that good of a fielder. And if they don't want him playing DH, basically backing up Ramos there, then I think that's a move that they're going to, if they haven't already started to regret it, that they're going to regret it this year, basically. So I do think that Ramos will have a ton of value. We'll just see when he does, in fact, come back. They said he was basically ahead by about a month or so in his rehab. So we'll see if that's actually accurate.
Evan, what are your thoughts on this move for Tampa Bay?
Well, I do like Ben was talking about the LASIK, and you kind of have something tangible to kind of tie it to. It doesn't always work like that. I'm a Braves fan. I watch Dan Uggla. I've cried over it. It doesn't always work out, but for a guy like Ramos, who's always been a, you know, semi-solid offensive guy, I don't know if people realize this, but he actually received, they were eighth place votes, but he received NL MVP votes last year. Like, he had a fantastic year. He was, among National League catchers, you know, top three basically across the board for a lot of the offensive metrics that you like to use, and defensively too. We'll see how, you know, the ACL injury works with that, but he threw out, you know, a third of base runners. Not that the AL East is, you know, tearing up the base pass or anything like that, but if you're looking up at a team like Boston, who actually led the AL East in steals, you know, that might be a way to neutralize some of their firepower against you if you're going to be thinking you're going to be in a race. I like the move. I like him as a player, and I think Mike's going to have lots of nice things to say when he finally gets a chance to chat about this guy.
Well, we won't. We'll try our best to make sure Mike doesn't get to chat about any Rays in a positive light. But
fuck him.
I'm not a huge fan of the signing of Wilson Ramos in terms of fantasy. I know that there's reports that he's like a month ahead of his kind of timetable for returning. That, you know, there's a chance he could be back in, you know, late May, early June. I don't really buy it, and I think if people are looking at him as, oh, you know what, you know, I'll get him in a keeper league for cheap this year, stash him for next year, you know, I worry that there's a chance that he's not going to be able to catch a ton of games and maybe lose a catcher eligibility for 2018. I don't love the park for him. I mean, I think he's got power that plays anywhere, so it's not going to be awful, but I don't think The more that they talk about his timetable being looking good, the less of a discount you're going to get at the draft table. I think he's the kind of guy that you may only get a small discount coming into drafts. And if you're, you know, maybe in a 12-team, mixed league, that one catcher, that's fine to do because, you know, there's plenty of guys that can kind of fill in until he's back and he kind of gets going. But in two catcher leagues, in deeper formats, I'm probably sticking away because I don't know what his health is going to look like when he comes back, how quickly he's actually able to get back on the field, if he's going to be catching, at all. In 2017, he's going to need extra days off coming off of the ACL surgery. I think there's just too much that can go wrong. I love the talent. I loved what he did last year. I love the fact that he was able to get the LASIK and really improve the skills and get back to what some people really thought he could be, when he started to break out a few years ago. But for me, for 2017 and after that, I think I'm out on Wilson Ramos. I'm just not willing to take the gamble, especially in any sort of keeper league where he could lose catcher eligibility going into next season. All right. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. Nate, thank you for joining us.
No, absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
Definitely. Why don't you tell people again what you do over at Roto World and then where they can reach you on social media?
Yeah, so right now with the off season, I'm writing columns on Monday mornings and Friday mornings, daily doses or off-season doses because it's not daily. So, kind of running down, just like we did here, running down the latest news and giving a little fantasy spin on it or my own spin on what I think about it. And I try my best. I stay pretty busy, but I try my best to tweet out the links or retweet when RotoWorld tweets out the links. And that's on Twitter. It's Nate_Grimm, Grimm.
All right. Thank you again for coming on. Ben, tell us where you can reach on Twitter and what you're working on.
I can be reached at bbrennisfwfb. That's BBRDNNEIS. And I'm currently hosting our Friends of Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast. We have a weekly show that I do with Eric Mackey. It's going very well. And then I am one of the football rankers for our website. So those are the things. And then I'll be getting into some off-season content for baseball in terms of writing and ranks. So.
And Evan, tell me or tell people where you can be reached on Twitter and what you're working on.
Yeah, it's about time to fire up the Twitter account again. EasyEv3, working now hard for Friends with Fantasy Benefits, putting together that team preview schedule. I'm going to be doing Braves with Matt and the Marlins and Nationals with Chuck. So all things NL East, come see me.
Definitely. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please feel free to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Really helps us out, pushes us up the ranks, and gets us out there for more people to hear us. And then as far as my written work, you can read anything I write for baseball over on FanGraphs, and then some more baseball stuff on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. All my football stuff goes up on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. Definitely check out the football podcast, which I'm on with Mike every week. And check out the basketball podcast with Ben and Eric and Eli and John. They're kicking ass over there, so definitely go check that out. A lot of great stuff coming up with friendswithfantasybenefits.com. We're going to have a ton of rankers this year, a ton of podcasts. We're going to do 30 team previews starting on January 2nd. Beginning of the year, we're going to hit the ground running. You are going to get, I think, 34 straight days of podcasts between team previews and then our regular main show that comes out on Monday. And then in February, once we're done with the team previews, you're going to get 5 shows a week with 5 different podcast teams. Then Ben, Evan, myself, and a bunch of other guys, some old, some new, that we'll be doing at friendswithfantasybenefits.com. So definitely check us out. Give us a review and see everything we've got going on at friendswithfantasybenefits.com. That will wrap us up. For Nate, Evan, Ben, and myself, thank you for listening. Have fantastic baseball off season.